Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is recent Blackjack Hall of Fame inductee Don Schlesinger. We'll be talking to Don in a few minutes. Recently, in the gambling news, in the Nevada legislature, they're looking for ways to legally add skill to slot machines, making them more like games you play on your PlayStation 3 or other such game boxes. If and when this comes to fruition, a whole new breed of APs will arise. Possibly the players with the best reflexes and hand-eye coordination will find advantages. Now, I'll be 68 years old this weekend, so it's going to be a while since such laws are passed, so likely the ship has sailed for me personally, being able to exploit opportunities based on fast reflexes. But many of our listeners are much younger and could compete in that area. It's kind of exciting to me that a new breed of APs is on the horizon, even if I won't personally be able to join them. Any thoughts on this, Richard?
Well, first of all, happy birthday, a little early.
Thank you. Nice of you to remember.
It's great news. I agree. It opens up the possibility of new ways to beat games. But I wouldn't assume that it's all going to be about reflexes. They do have this new heads-up poker machine, which can be beat by a select few people who are really good enough at limit hold'em. Yes. So some of the games maybe will be those young guys call the Olympics of the mind, you know?
The Olympics of the mind. Well, they already have that sort of in video poker. I wouldn't call heads-up poker a slot machine.
Well, it is a machine that you play against.
It is definitely a machine, and as a video poker player, I'm used to those games of skill. But these are going to be new. All right, let's talk to our guest. Don Schlesinger is a mathematician and has been one of the foremost blackjack analysts going back several decades. Less than a month ago, he was inducted into the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Blackjack Attack, Playing the Pros Ways, is in its third edition and is must reading for all blackjack professional. Don Schlesinger, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you very much, Bob, and it's a pleasure to be there. I would to say happy birthday and add my wishes to Richard's, and thank you for having me back. It's been about 2 or 3 years since the last program, which I enjoyed very much, and I'm looking forward to this evening as well.
Good. That last program was on April 12th, 2012. Michael Shackelford was my co-host at the time. Most of the questions were going to be new tonight. So those of you who end up liking the way the show is today, go back and check out that old episode. It's number 62, and I think it'll be a good use of your time if you're into the blackjack world. So, Don, you are now in the Blackjack Hall of Fame, hosted by Barona Casino. Both Richard and I voted for you at the recent Blackjack Ball. His vote counted 3 times as mine simply because he's already a member of the Blackjack Hall of Fame. Being a member of the Video Poker Hall of Fame doesn't cut much mustard in that group. Both of us feel that you being honored in this way has been long deserved, and now it's finally gotten here. So how does it feel to be acknowledged by your peers in this way?
Well, first of all, thanks for those 4 votes. I needed them, so I appreciate your support. And honestly, it's very gratifying, and some people may say that it was a while in coming, but that's neither here nor there. It's now a fact, and I'm very grateful to those who supported me, and particularly Anthony Curtis, who contacted me and said, you know, there's been a little misunderstanding over the years, but I think it's time that we get you on the ballot, and hopefully there will be enough support to have you inducted. That turned out to be the case. So thank you very much to Anthony, and of course to Max Rubin, who's not only the organizer of the entire event and of the competition and the voting that takes place, but is an extremely gracious host, and who obviously opens up his home and does a tremendous job each year with this event. I was delighted to meet a lot of people, and some were acquaintances from quite some time ago. So we saw some old friends in Stanford Wong and Henry Tamburin and Anthony Curtis. And I was especially happy to meet some people with whom I had corresponded over the years, but never met face to face. And that includes you and Richard, of course, but also Ed Thorpe and Tommy Hyland and Johnny Chang and some of the MIT team and Bob Loeb. So it was a great evening. I was very happy to be there, and I was very proud and privileged to have been inducted.
It's my favorite night of the year. It's really quite a party, and anytime I'm included in a group that includes Ed Thorpe, I'm happy.
Now that you're a member of the Hall of Fame, there's a picture involved. At Barona, there's a wall, and the honorees have pictures of them. And so now some of the players who've retired, such as Stanford Wong and Ed Thorpe, they use professionally done headshots. Now, some active players use heavy disguises and occasionally pictures of someone else entirely. John Chang, who you also mentioned, uses a photo from when he was about 8 years old, which surprisingly really looks like the way he does some 5 decades later, which is amazing. So, have you decided what kind of picture you're going to put up there at the Barona Hall of Fame wall?
Well, I've been agonizing over this, actually discussing it with my family, and I'm going to enlist you guys and ask for your opinions, because I really do have mixed emotions. As you mentioned, some of the people who aren't as active as players anymore, and I will put myself in a kind of a semi-active role. I don't play nearly as much as I used to, but I still do play. So there's a part of me that says I've protected not having photos and images over the internet or in general being seen in any type of publications. There's a part of me that says I really should continue to do that. But then I see the rather, as you mentioned, Bob, elegant headshots and professional pictures of Stanford Wong, Ed Thorpe, Keith Taft, Peter Griffin, Ken Houston. And there's a part of me that says, you know, there ought to be some sort of dignity to this, and it would be nice if you really could have a correct likeness up there. So I'm somewhat torn. I'm going to be honest and tell you that for a Blackjack Hall of Fame and for something that lots of people go by and look at, it's almost too bad that, you know, we have to have these clownish disguises and wigs and mustache and glasses. And Richard, I don't know if you want to say, you know, what your picture is, but, you know, sometimes not even of the person or when he's 8 years old. Strangely enough, I trotted out some pictures from about 40 years ago, and my wife looked at them and said, the face is the same. That looks just like you. So that's not going to work either. I don't know what we do. Do we Photoshop something? Richard, you want to tell the people what you did?
You didn't.
I think the answer to that is no. But go ahead.
No, I used a picture of my father. I completely understand your ambivalence. I mean, if you want to play at all, it's you don't want that picture out there floating around. I mean, so. Right. Which actually brings up an interesting point. When you play, do you play as a refusal, or do you use a player's card with your name on it? And are you worried about that being an issue now?
Well, it's an issue in a different way. I used to play with a card that did not have my real name, and that's fraught with danger these days, and times have changed. And so now I am playing as a refusal, and that, of course, brings up problems of its own. I'm sure that most of our listeners are knowledgeable and know what the term means. But for those who may not, you know, when you sit down and you play for decent stakes, it's only a couple of seconds before a pit boss comes over and asks you, do you have a player's card, or would you like one, or what is your name? And, you know, they try to get as much information as they can. So refusal simply means politely saying, no, I don't have a card, and no, thank you, I don't want one. But that normally raises some red flags right away, because most people, especially if they play for decent stakes, are offered various comps. And as a result, it's a little suspicious to a pit boss who may want to give you things that you say, no, thanks, that's all right, simply because you don't want to give up a name or an identity. So, it's going to be a problem. I think I probably will have to come up with some sort of a doctoring of a photo or a disguise, but it's almost too bad. You know, you wish it didn't have to be that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And one slight way around that is give Max two pictures. One slightly doctored, and two, tell Max when he reads your obituary, put up the real headshot.
And I don't know which I should be rooting for. I guess I don't want that one up too soon.
Well, but, to be sure, but it doesn't appear to bother Peter Griffin up there anymore. Keith Taff,
unfortunately, or
Peter Houston.
Not quite half and half, but almost half of the people in the Hall of Fame sadly have passed on, and as you say, that's not their problem anymore. So maybe we'll swap one out when the time comes. Yeah. And for the longer period of time, we'll have the decent one up there, and we'll see. But thank you for the advice.
All right. Let's talk about a couple of things in your Blackjack Attack book. One of the things in the book is your SCORE index. It's an acronym, SCORE. So please briefly describe how the index works, and then I'll ask my question about it.
Okay, sure. I'm not going to rehash some of what we did on the last show, because we did discuss it. And as you mentioned, if people want to hear a little bit more about it, maybe they'll jump over to the archive and listen to the first show. But the idea of SCORE, by the way, the acronym means Standardized Comparison of Risk and Expectation. So it was an incorporation of your edge in the game, your expectation, and the risk that you are willing to take on to achieve that edge as expressed by standard deviation or variance. And we put that into a formula that allowed you to make an apples to apples comparison of various games. Now, when we talk about various games, people listening might say, well, gee, it's the game of blackjack. What do you mean by that? Well, yeah, it's the game of blackjack, but single deck, double deck, four deck, six deck, eight deck, all different kinds of rules, all different kinds of penetration or depth of dealing. So when you sit down to play a game, you're really playing one of dozens of varieties of how the game can be played. And you might walk into a casino where there are, in fact, many different such offerings, and you wonder, which is the best game to play? Where should I sit down? And what I what I did by this type of evaluation was to let somebody say, all other things being equal, I'm not worried about heat, I'm not worrying about travel, all these games are available, they're in front of me right now, which would be the best one to play? Now, it's a little bit analogous to like your gas mileage. Everybody buys a new car, you see that sticker that's put on by the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, and you know what they do is let you know if everybody were to drive this car in exactly the same fashion, this is the mileage, and you can compare it to another one. That's what I attempted to do with SCORE, and I'm grateful that players have found it very helpful, and they've embraced the idea, and it's talked about a great deal.
Okay. Now, the Kelly criterion is frequently used as to how big you should make your bet. And one of the simplifications of Kelly is edge divided by variance. Now, that sounds to me to be at least similar to SCORE. So how is SCORE similar, and how is it different than Kelly?
Well, that's a very interesting question. And in fact, SCORE does have exactly that component of your edge divided by the variance, which in turn is the square of standard deviation, as part of it. So the actual formula for SCORE is to take that Kelly bet, that optimal bet, which is your advantage divided by the variance, and then say, okay, now we've determined your bet size, how are we going to figure out how much you're going to win per hour? Because that's what the SCORE rating is. And so what you do is you have to take that bet size, that ideal or optimal bet, edge divided by variance, and now multiply it by whatever advantage you have at each one of the true counts that you're going to be betting. So, you know, if you jot down the formula, edge divided by variance, that's the bet size. Now you have to multiply that by the edge yet again. You have to multiply that bet by the advantage that you have at each one of the true counts. And in the old days, before we had software, we would take the bet at each true count multiplied by the advantage that you had at each true count, and then waited for the frequency, how often each one came up. You'd multiply those across and then sum them vertically, and that's the way you got the global advantage or the hourly win rate, which is the score when you're betting the Kelly criterion. So it's an interesting question, Bob, and the answer is that SCORE is simply the Kelly bet, the edge divided by the variance, and then multiplied by the edge yet again. So what you get is you get the edge squared or the expectation squared divided by the variance. And the variance is the standard deviation squared. You get the edge squared on the top. You get the standard deviation squared on the bottom. And that gives you this hourly win rate. And so we also have the notion of the desirability index or the Sharpe ratio. That was the square root, just the edge divided by the standard deviation. And these were the concepts that we broadened out for all the different games and all the different scenarios. So somebody wants to say, you know, I can go to this casino and play that game, or I can go across the street and they offer this one with different rules, different cut, different number of decks. Which one will I win more per hour? That's the concept of SCORE and what players are using to evaluate the attractiveness or the profitability of different games.
And when you standardized this, you used it, you were looking at each game based on as if the player had a $10,000 bankroll. Is that correct? And he were to bet it the same way, so that you
know,
come up with a number?
We had to choose all the inputs, Richard, so the question is important. And yes, it was arbitrary, but at least it was standard. And
no, that's
arbitrary.
What I mean. So at the end of this, you come up with a number, you know, this game is a 30 and this other game is a 35 or whatever.
Yes. And that's exactly right. And it actually has a dollar meaning to it. So if one game's a 30 and the other is 35, what it really means is, given all of the standard inputs that I chose, namely a $10,000 bankroll, you're playing high-low, you're going to have two people at the table if it's a single deck, three if it's double deck, four if it's a shoe game. You're going to use various different spreads, and I gave different scores for each one of the types of spreads. You're going to sit down and play all, or you're going to back count, and you're going to have all the different combinations of rules possible. Stand or hit on soft 17, double after splits or not, surrender or not, or any combination thereof. Yeah, and then once we give all of those inputs or the assumptions, we come up with these numbers. And these numbers are, in fact, dollar hourly win rates, given that you will play in the fashion of the assumptions that were made.
Yeah, and for the younger players, I don't think they, you know, nowadays there's software where they plug it in and it runs the sims and it can just say, you know, this is your edge and this is your win rate and this is the score of this game. But in the old days, you literally had to look at charts of how often each true count occurred and plug in all the, I mean, it was a big pain.
It was a tremendous pain, and I've still got my marked-up editions of Wong's Blackjack newsletters, in which he published way back in the 1970s and early 1980s all of these computer simulations with just what we were talking about, the win rates, the true counts, the frequencies, and I had them all marked up in pencil and had my little pocket calculator and was multiplying across just the way I mentioned to you and then summing them up and trying to do all these calculations. So we've kind of cut to the chase and made it a little bit easier for people. And as you mentioned, the software, even more flexible still, because it's multidimensional and, you know, not limited to the printed page. So we've come a long way since those days.
You know, you mentioned playing in the 70s. When did you actually start playing, and how has blackjack changed since then?
Well, I played for the first time in Las Vegas in 1975. And in fact, I can remember it well. It was over, I was teaching at the time, so it was over the Easter vacation in April. So we're coming up very, very close in a couple of months to what would be a 40th anniversary for me. I didn't start immediately counting. That came a year or two later, but that was officially my first time out there. And of course, in terms of how things have changed, I think we discussed it quite a bit on the last show as to, you know, how is playing today different from back in the day? And to be very honest with you, I really have to say that I just don't find it very much fun anymore. And I don't know if you feel the same way, Richard, but we talked about on the last show how rules have deteriorated. We've talked about the increased surveillance and the technology that makes playing so much harder. We've talked about the corporate ownership of casinos, where if you now get backed off in one place and that belongs to, say, Harrah's Entertainment or MGM, it can mean that, you know, you're really no good in a dozen different places all at once. And so I won't rehash any of that discussion, but I have to say to you that the bottom line for all of that having taken place is that I just don't see playing today nearly as enjoyable as I saw it back in those days. I can remember walking into the what we call the main line or the center aisle of Caesar's Palace and sitting down with friends and probably overstaying our welcome somewhat for a couple of hours. But they were so tolerant and it was so enjoyable. And we really look forward to vacations with the family and coming out and enjoying not only the games, but the good weather and what the town had to offer, along with other venues as well in the Caribbean or where have you. And I just have to honestly say, and I wonder if you feel the same way, Richard, that it, at least from the traditional card counting point of view, and I know an awful lot of people have moved on, it isn't the same anymore. It's not as enjoyable.
Yeah, no, I would agree.
Well, there's another fact, too, at least for me, maybe not for you guys, but I'm 40 years older now than I was in 75, and that affects my enjoyment on a lot of things. So, good. Now, in your Blackjack Attack book, probably the most thing you're most famous for is your illustrious 18, and that's sometimes expanded to catch 22. These are the most important indexes a card counter should know, so that he can get a very high percentage of the accuracy from card counting while knowing only a small fraction of the total number of indexes. So my first question is, how much does the illustrious 18 player give up compared to somebody playing all the indices accurately?
Well, the answer is, with a lot of these things, it depends, but the answer is also not very much. So that's the part that makes it all so attractive. I think most of our listeners understand that when you count cards, there are two contributions to your advantage. One comes from varying your bet, and the other comes from occasionally varying your play and deviating from basic strategy. So we call those playing departures. And we use numbers or indexes to tell us at what true count to make those departures. And so if you are playing a game in which you're varying your bet greatly, maybe a shoe game, maybe 1 to 20, 1 to 16 or so, the bet component of your advantage is an appreciable multiple of your playing advantage. It can be as much as 3 to 1. So 75% of all the edge that you get from card counting can come from varying your bet, and only the other 25% come from playing departures. At the other end of the spectrum, you might play a single or a double deck game where you can't spread as widely, and where therefore the playing departures take on a more prominent role, and perhaps the betting is only 60 to 65% of your edge, where the departures can be worth more. So the answer, it depends, is it depends on what kind of game you're playing. But for people who do play the shoe game with a decent amount of variation, you can probably attribute most of your edge to betting and maybe only 25% to using indices. So now we come to the question, Bob, and that is, of that 25% that's left, how much of that do you capture when you use only the 18 indices as opposed to, 100, 120, whatever you've got dancing around in your head? And that answer can be as much as 85 to 90%, which is really quite amazing. And it's really what I was trying to explain to everyone, and that was that, you can use 150 indices and get X percent of the edge, 100% of the edge, or you can whittle it down to 18 and, 18 out of 150, what's that, about 12% or so, use 12% of the indices and get 90% of the edge. That's a pretty good deal. So I think that I sometimes was misunderstood where people would say that I was advocating doing this, and that's not really true. You'll never find anywhere in the book where I said, this is what you should do. Just learn the 18 and no more. What I wanted people to be aware of was that they didn't have to go out and learn 150 indices in order to be able to count cards effectively, and that they could learn a much smaller subset of 150 and yet still get the great majority of the edge. Now, you want to go out and learn more? Be my guest. I never said to anybody, don't do that. But I just wanted them to know that that extra effort was only going to be, you know, giving them somewhat diminished returns.
And actually, many people don't split tens just because of heat reasons. So, you know, if you were to remove those out of the 18, you know, you're not giving up that much more by not splitting tens, right?
No, you're not. You know, I quantified the contribution of each one of the 18 on the list, and I think the total of all of them was like 35 hundredths or so in terms of advantage, and the splitting of tens was like 0.35, was about 10% of that. So if you don't split tens because you're afraid of how that looks, yeah, you give up a little bit, but you're only giving up 10% of the whole contribution of the 18. And we just learned that, you know, the entire gamut of playing variation is only a small percentage of the total edge that you get from at least playing the shoe game with bet variation. So no one play becomes all that critical. The top three, as most players know, are insurance and standing on 15 and 16 against the dealer's 10. Those three plays alone are worth somewhat near about a third of the whole list. So, you know, you can sort of pick and choose and see the ones that are worth the most.
Also in your book, you have a chapter called The Ultimate Blackjack Simulation, where with the help of Norm Wattenberger and his Casino Verite computer products, and you did a few trillion hands of simulation. Now, you have 140 different charts in that chapter. Now, what's found in those charts that isn't available elsewhere?
Well, it's funny, you know, a few trillion. It's true. Norm, God bless him, dear friend of mine, Norm always says, you know, if you don't do a couple of billion hands, the simulation's not worth anything. I think about, again, Richard, the good old days when Wong was cranking these things out, not on the kind of computers that we have today. And now Norm bangs out, you know, billions of hands in literally a couple of minutes. So things are very different. Bob, I think the answer to your question is it's not so much what can you find there that you can't find anywhere else, because ultimately, if you go to other books or if you go to the genial software that Norm has produced in Casino Verite, you'll find all of these things. What I did was just put them all under one roof and make them extremely easy to consult and make them available to players. You know, 140 charts, all the different numbers of decks, different rules, different penetrations, different bed spreads, and then all of the statistics that you'd want to know. The true count frequencies and the edges, the standard deviations, the optimal bet sizes, the Kelly Bank, the hourly win rate, the average bet, and of course, the desirability index and the score. They're all rather nicely arrayed and laid out in these tables that are two to a page. And I guess the whole chapter is probably, you know, a mini book of its own. It's just a little bit over 100 pages. And I think what players have done over the years, at least this is what they tell me, is the book's pretty hefty. Book's about 535 pages, and they don't always want to pack that in their suitcase when they leave. But an awful lot of players would tell me that they had Xeroxed the charts and that they just took loose pages, which were a lot easy to pack, and they were armed with that, and they knew that no matter what game they encountered, no matter where they went or what the rules were or number of decks or whatever, they would have the charts available to them with all the information at their fingertips. Of course, nowadays you travel with laptop computers and you can access Norm's software directly. But again, those traveling, you know, lightly would have all of this at their fingertips. So I think that's really the claim to fame, that we put it all under one roof.
Now, Blackjack Attack was first published in 1997, and the copy I have is a third edition. It was published in 2005. It's 10 years ago. Is there a fourth edition in the works? And if so, how will it be different?
And is there a Kindle edition too?
Yeah, you know, I just had the ability to correct some couple of rare typos here and there, and we published the third edition, but with another printing. So we're happy to say that, you know, a couple of little typos here and there and inaccuracies that bugged me a little bit, we finally got to correct from 2005. It, you know, took a little while. And I get asked about a fourth edition. I don't want to say that everything that I know about the game is already in this one, because you never stop learning. But I think there's an awful lot of material in the book. And it isn't too often that we get people who say, I tried to find the answer, but it wasn't in Blackjack Attack, at least insofar as straight counting is concerned. People know that I do not go into other AP genres such as shuffle tracking or sequencing or hole carding, and that wasn't the intent of this particular work. But I think if I were to do a fourth edition, and I have to honestly say that it's not in the works right now, I would probably include some of the material that I've published over the years on the websites. I've answered thousands of questions, sort of, you know, like case law, and some of them were reasonably interesting. So we might expand that chapter where we did some of those answers to questions that we have gotten over the years. I also had the person who worked on one of the chapters with me that we called Zen Fighter, and he's a lovely man that I've been friendly with for a long time. He did some work on the Illustrious 18, just kind of revising and revisiting it a little bit, and I have that work, and I promised him one day we'd try to get it published. So I can't honestly say that a fourth edition is imminent. It's sort of on the back burner, but I've learned never to say never, so maybe one day.
Richard snuck in another question there, which about Kindle or putting on some kind of, if you had it on a Kindle, you wouldn't need to Xerox all those pages because Kindles are very portable and stuff. Is there any chance that even without being updated, it can be put onto some kind of device like that?
You know, it's really an interesting question. People asked us to do this, and I discussed it with Victor and Betty Nacht, who are the publishers at RGE Publishing. And interestingly enough, and I'm really not a computer maven, so it's not my bailiwick, but for the very reason that you just said, I was told that it would be very difficult for the charts to come out well on Kindle. And I don't know enough about how they scan and what the problems might be. But Bob, as you pointed out earlier, there are just hundreds and hundreds of charts and, you know, a tremendous amount of statistics and numbers and what have you. And apparently, and don't ask me why, because I really don't know the answer, but apparently all of that may not translate very well onto Kindle. So I think that may be what has held it up, at least until now.
when you were on our show in April of 2012, we asked you what books should be on a blackjack player's library, and have those books changed since in the last 3 years?
Well, there's been a couple of new ones that have come out. Some of them were purely informational. Others related people's careers playing the games. I love the Tilton book, The Blackjack Life. My good friend Rick Blaine, whom you had on the show last week, and who won the competition at the Blackjack Ball, put out a revised edition of Blackjack Blueprint, which is a wonderful book. And so I think those are very worthwhile additions to anyone's library. If we take a minute to just rehash the ones from before, everybody knows Stanford Wong's Professional Blackjack, Peter Griffin's The Theory of Blackjack, Kenny Houston's Million Dollar Blackjack. I think for historical purposes, you can't really say that you're a part of this game if you haven't read Ed Thorpe's Beat the Dealer, just to know where it all comes from. Black Belt in Blackjack, Arnold Snyder. And yes, there's another edition, and that is Norm Wattenberger has put into print as much as he could from his spectacular online version of the book that he called Modern Blackjack. And it's in two volumes. And he's done spectacular research into the game. And those two volumes, which you can also find online, because interestingly enough, he's really given this away, which is extremely generous of him. But the fact of the matter is that we probably didn't mention that the last time. And it's an extremely valuable two-volume set. And he did some beautiful work with that.
One of the things I liked about Rick Blaine's book, it very much like Million Dollar Blackjack by Ken Houston. I like when the author combines stories of their actual play with whatever it is they're trying to teach. And I thought Rick Blaine did that really well. I recommend his book when a lot of people ask me to recommend a book to start, you know, learning to count cards. I often recommend Rick's book. I thought it was really good.
Well, you know, he's done it all, and war stories are also, you know, what makes a book interesting. You always want to try to mix up some of the facts and the math, which occasionally, you know, can be somewhat dry and dull, but, you know, maybe necessary with personal experience. I've tried to do that in another area when I've done conferences on derivatives. And, you know, people like to get the information about options. They like to learn the math, but they all perk up and they smile and they tend to pay a little bit more attention when you tell them about what you did on the trading desk and some of the errors that were made and some of the mistakes or what have you. And Rick has been out in the trenches. He's a player. He's done it all. And it's fascinating to read the stories along with the math. So it's a wonderful book.
Very good. We've been talking to Donald Schlesinger, author of Blackjack Attack, newest member to the Blackjack Hall of Fame. We're going to let you go. We want to thank you very, very much for being on the show. Next year, when you win the Blackjack Ball competition, the Grossjean Cup, you're going to have to come on again. You know that, don't you?
That's right. Put the pressure on me. Well, look, thank you very much to both of you. It's always a pleasure. I enjoy chatting with you. I would be privileged to come back anytime that you would like. It's been fun, and I hope the listeners have enjoyed.
I'm sure they have. Thank you, Donald Schlesinger.
Thanks, you.
That's a pleasure. I enjoy some of his stories.
Someday we'll have to get him to talk about working with Jerry Patterson back in the 70s.
Yeah, he briefly talked about that during the first interview back on number 62, if you want to go to bobdancer.com and look at the archives of it. And I knew about the Target, which is the Jerry Patterson
voodoo system,
wacko system, yeah. But apparently, before that, Jerry Patterson was quite a legitimate teacher. Schlesinger was a he worked for Jerry Patterson, teaching classes using the Patterson method. And then Jerry, I don't know what he smoked, but it all got changed.
I really wonder if he actually believed that stuff, or he just thought, oh, I can actually make a lot more money selling voodoo than I can, you know, selling the truth.
I don't have the answer to that question. Let's do some commercials. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. The main promotion in February is for penny slots. It's called Penny Perks. They're giving $1 million in bonuses to penny slot machine players. And so as you play the machines, it builds up and then you get the bonus. So they're usually 8 or 10% holds, and so most of us would run away from them. But they do have some must-hit buys. So it will say it hits the major jackpot by 500 or hits the minor jackpot by 50 or whatever the numbers are. And so those of us who check out those numbers are looking for a smart place to jump in when they have the Penny Perks promotion. It's probably a good idea to jump in a little bit earlier. Double Points is this coming Monday, President's Day, February 16th, midnight to midnight, no limits, all machines. It's all video poker is double points. Slot machines, including pennies, are 5x points. You'll find me on the Quick Quads machine. Next week's class, Noons Wednesday in the Grandview Lounge at South Point, is Double Double Bonus Ultimate X. I'm teaching a simplified strategy, but we use the simplified strategy. The game returns 99.80%. With the slot club of 0.3, you have a small advantage 24/7 and a bigger advantage on double point days. And you get mailers and you get comps. Ultimate X is a game where you earn bonuses with every scoring hand. And the strategy is a mixture of getting the most out of the current hand and also building the biggest bonus for the next hand. So it combines things. So even though it is Double Double Bonus Ultimate X, the strategy is fairly close to Double Bonus, because Double Bonus has higher returns for flushes and straights and full houses than other games do. And the biggest bonuses in Ultimate X are for full houses, flushes, and straights. So it's not exactly the same, but it's similar. At the Palms, 7 o'clock Fridays, have a drawing. Every week, $10,000 is given away. You don't need to be there to win, but you need to claim your prize by midnight or your money evaporates into thin air. You earn 5x entries, 8 p.m. to midnight on Fridays, and also Friday afternoon between 4 and 6:30, you earn 2x entries. PFP, play for prizes, ending tomorrow. You can work for Albertson's cards. It's a rate of 0.20%. You keep your points. Beginning Monday and going for 2 weeks, you earn whatever gift cards they have. And so whatever they have in their warehouse, so it'll probably include Albertsons, it'll probably include CVS Pharmacy, Lowe's, quite a few others that they've given away, and they still have some extras on. So it might vary from day to day. So if you earn enough for a $100 card, which would be 50,000 points from video poker, and you don't like the cards that are offered today, well, you can come back tomorrow and you might have a different selection. Might be a worse selection, but that's part of the game. All right, videopoker.com. It's the best place to play a lot of games. If you sign up for the gold membership $8.95 a month, $79.95 a year. You get correction on most games, including quick quads. So you can get the strategy for quick quads from a book you can download for free that I helped write, or Shaq's website, wizardofoz.com, gives you the strategy. But if you want correction, go to videopoker.com and get the gold membership. Now, the game of the week this week is quick quads, and it's triple play. And so quick quads is a 6-coin per line game, where a quick quad is a 3-of-a-kind, and the other two cards add up to the rank of the 3-of-a-kind, such as 5-5-5-3-2 would be a quick quad in this game, paying 260 coins, or 10-10-10-5-5, or 9-9-9-8-8. So there's lots of these, and they count as 4-of-a-kind. And since you get so many of them, you pay 6 coins per line and only get paid 5 coins, but so the math works out. But the double-double bonus quick quads is 99.65, and it goes up to $10 play, which is $60 per pull.
Do jacks, queens, and kings count 11, 12, and 13?
They do not. They have tried that, and that game did not work. But so every quick quad is limited to numbers between ace and 10. And so, good. So we have a rare for us. We have our next 3 weeks. We have a guest for our next 3 weeks already in the bank. So next week is Tyson Steeb. Is that the way you pronounce his name?
Maybe.
Maybe. All right. Good. Probably a good idea to find out between now and then. He's one of the 5 authors of the book called Flop Turn River. It's the Huntington Press 4th book in the Kill Phil series. And so Tyson will be on talking about that. The week after that will be Michael Gaughan, who's the owner of the South Point. And he's going to be talking about his father, Jackie Gaughan, who passed away last year. And Jackie Gaughan owned the El Cortez and was one of the movers and shakers in Las Vegas for a great many years. And so he'll be on in 2 weeks. And in 3 weeks is Michael Craig. Michael Craig has written a book called The Banker, The Professor, and The Suicide King. Is that right?
Yeah, and boy, it's a great book. I mean, I can't recommend it enough if you haven't read it. You know, it's about this very wealthy guy named Andy Beal who came to town and wanted to play poker, and he figured the only way he could get an edge on the top poker players was try to put money pressure on them. So he just wanted to bet more than they were comfortable playing for. So as I say, it's a really great book, really well written. I highly recommend it to our listeners. And he also now blogs, I think, for Poker Stars. And he does some other writing, too. Actually, he has an article out about, I think, about Bitcoins that I've been meaning to read but haven't gotten to yet.
All right. So I've read about a third of the book so far and enjoying it. So when you're betting 10,000, 20,000 no limit hold'em, each pot heads up. Each pot was a couple $100,000 dollars in the
yeah, limit hold'em. They were playing limit hold'em.
They were playing
and it got much higher than 10-20. And he was just back in town recently playing again, so he hasn't had enough.
Uh-huh. Well, did he have any trouble finding a game?
No, he doesn't have.
All right. Thank you very much, Donald Schlesinger, Richard Munchkin. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.